So we have the translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So the translation. Nothing remains unachieved when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with someone. By transcendental achievement, one understands everything else to be insignificant. One who engages in transcendental loving service is elevated to the highest perfectional stage by the Lord Himself, who is seated in everyone's heart. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, the Lord gives intelligence to the pure devotees so that they may be elevated to the highest perfectional stage. It is confirmed herein that a pure devotee who constantly engages in the loving service of the Lord is awarded all knowledge necessary to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For such a devotee, there is nothing valuable to be achieved but the Lord's service. If one serves faithfully, there's no possibility of frustration because the Lord Himself takes charge of the devotee's advancement. The Lord is seated in everyone's heart, and He knows the devotee's motive and arranges everything achievable. In other words, the pseudo-devotee who is anxious to achieve material gains cannot attain the highest perfectional stage because the Lord is in knowledge of his motive. One merely has to become sincere in his purpose, and then the Lord is there to help in every way. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Katamayam Tatati Svapatantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrachatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Payevacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Okay. I'm really nervous because you're all very senior devotees. Usually you do this with children. Who's been following this story so far? Who's been coming? You're here. You're coming every day. Is anyone coming not for the first time? You've all been following the story? Yeah? Ready for a recap? I'm going to test you. Okay, so who is speaking in this verse? Does anybody know? Vidura? Is it Vidura? Yeah. Good guess. He's being spoken to. That was going to be my next question. So it's Maitreya Rishi. So that Maitreya Rishi is the guru. He's speaking to Vidura. Who's telling this story? So we're going to go a little bit further out. Who's telling this story? Who's telling the story of this conversation between Maitreya Rishi and Vidura? Sukadev Goswami? No, I think it is. Sukadev Goswami, yeah. I was like, oh, what if I got it wrong? It's Sukadev Goswami. Who's he speaking to? King Parikshit, Parikshit Maharaj. And we're going to come a bit further out. Who's telling the story of Sukadev Goswami speaking to King Parikshit? Shonaka Rishi? Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami is speaking to the sages. Sonika Rishi is the one that asks the questions. So yes, he's the one listening. Who's telling that story? Huh? Me? No. There's someone else. Who's telling the story of the sages of Naimisharanya? Vyasadev, the author. So there's this children's book, what's it called? Charlie Cook's favorite book. And it was like, he was reading a story about a story about a story about a story. So this is what Bhagavatam's like. And sometimes when we're reading, when we're going through these classes and going through the verses, we kind of lose the flow of what's going on. So this is coming to the end of a very special story. We've had about 2 months, just over 2 months of this story. So Manu, he's the son of Lord Brahma. He asks his father how he can serve him. And this has made Lord Brahma really, really happy. Why is he so happy? Why is Lord Brahma so excited that Manu's asked, how can I serve you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so Priyojan Prabhu is saying, well, when you're a parent and you've got your child saying, oh, what can I do for you? It's like, oh, I get really excited. If my girls say, oh, how can I say, what can I do for you, mummy? I'll be really, really excited. I'll be like, oh, good, okay, you're very obedient children. I bless you. It's a sign of maturity. And you know what? You'd be even happier if you'd been let down before a few times. You know when you've been really disappointed before and then all of a sudden, finally, something goes your way. That makes you even happier. So Brahma was actually a little bit disappointed before. Does anyone know why he was disappointed before? Yeah? Oh, sorry. Oh, sure. Okay, yes, Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah. Mhm. Mhm. Okay, brilliant. Thank you. What's your name, Prabhu?
Jay.
Okay, Jay Prabhu said that, well, Lord Brahma, he had the four Kumaras, and he said, go forth and have children. And they were like, no, sorry, we want to stay celibate. So he was a little bit frustrated about that, but he tried to keep it in. He said, okay, I'm not going to get angry. But if you keep it in, what happens? It kind of builds up, and it really built up. I think it was from his forehead came Rudradev. And then I think you were saying that Rudra refused to have children, but actually he was very obedient because his father said to him, go forth and have children. He said, okay. And Rudra went to have children, but these children were really chaotic. They were causing damage everywhere, destruction everywhere. They ended up chasing after Lord Brahma as well. And so Lord Brahma was like, okay, wait, no more children. Please stop, no more children. Actually, you just do austerities. Okay, I've got to figure out something else. I need to populate this world. I've created this world. We need to get all the spirit souls here. So then the next thing he does is he creates all these sages, Narada Muni, and then these progenitors, Daksha. And he says, go forth and have children. They just don't do, well, Narada Muni obviously doesn't have the children, but there's other progenitors that do, but they just don't do as well. They don't manage to make as many children. So now he's had Manu. Oh, actually, while he was worrying about this, then Manu just appeared with his wife. And then both of them came up to Lord Brahma and said, how can we serve you? He was like, oh, finally. Okay. So he said, go forth and have children. And Manu said, I would love to. I will do whatever you say, but I have a problem. What was the problem? Vrinda, do you know what the problem was? Does anyone know what? Yes. He said, the earth. I've got nowhere to put these living entities. When I have the children, where are they going to go? We've got the earth, but it's at the bottom of the ocean. It's no good there. I can't do anything about it. That's up to you, Father. You're going to have to sort this out, and you and the mercy of Krishna, your endeavor and the mercy of Krishna. Lord Brahma thought, okay, let me figure this out. And he thought for a long time, it says in the Bhagavatam. And that's quite interesting because Lord Brahma's moments are a very long time. So imagine what his long time was. The earth must have been under that water for a while. And then after a while, he thought, I can't do anything about this. I'm going to have to leave it up to Krishna. And this reminded me of Shruti Dharma Prabhu. Do you guys remember Shruti Dharma Prabhu? Yeah, Shruti Dharma Prabhu. We remember. Yeah, he was a saint of the manor. And I remember asking him, actually it was really strange because I was expecting my daughter and I asked him, you know, can you give me blessings? And do you know what he said? I thought it had no relevance to having a baby, but he actually said, you know, in management, sometimes you can't actually deal with the situation and sometimes you just have to wait, be patient and wait. And Krishna sorts it all out. And I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting. Okay, that was okay. Thank you for the blessings. You know, that just kind of went away. And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is exactly what Lord Brahma did. He couldn't do anything. There are times in our lives when we just can't figure out the solution. And at that point, we're like, Krishna, this is up to you. And Lord Brahma has shown us this is what he's done. So which ocean was this earth at the bottom of? Garbhadaka Ocean. Yes, the Garbhadaka Ocean is within this universe bubble that we're all in. And so while he was thinking about this, something happened. Something came out of. Yes, what did it come out of? His nostril. It's really strange. How big was this thing that came out of his nostril? Huh? The size of a thumb? Yeah, everyone, the size of Brahma's thumb? Yeah? And oh, yeah, oh, you're jumping ahead. Yep, you're right. He came out, he actually wasn't the size of a thumb. He was the size of the upper portion of the thumb. details. This is very important. This is Bhagavatam. This is the stuff that's worth remembering and thinking about and meditating on. Like, what was the size of Varahadev when he came out of the nostril? He was the size of the upper portion of the thumb. Then he comes up into the sky. And then how big does he get? As a mountain, not quite a mountain. It's another animal. Elephant, yes. He became as big as an elephant. So now he is a boar. He comes out, he's as big as an elephant up in the sky. This is all very, very crazy. And then what happened next? He roared. Yeah. Oh my God. You know what? I really thought that during this class you were going to say, oh, he went in the ocean. But yes, he roared. You know what's so nice about doing class with children is that at this point there would be a tumultuous cacophony of roaring. Everyone would just go into roaring. Would anyone like to roar? Should we do it together? Okay. Okay, one, two, three. Yes, he roared. And I always wondered, did he roar like a boar, or did he roar like an elephant, or did he roar like a lion? We'll only find out when we get all this transcendental knowledge, maybe. But I always wonder, he roared. And then he roared again. Are you ready? One, two, three. He roared again. And then the residents, they chanted that. I know, no one's going to ask me to do Bhagavatam class again. But then the residents of the heavenly planets, Satyaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka, they started chanting prayers from the Vedas. And then he roared again. Should we try a pig roar? Should we try a boar roar? Come on, guys. I think we're warming up now. You're not warming up. But let's try a pig roar. So we're going to have to do a little bit of snorting. Hari bol, hari bol. So are you ready, children? Are you ready, devotees? Let's do a pig roar. We're gonna do a bit of snorting. Are you ready? One, two, three. Oh, good. I was so scared I was going to be the only one doing that myself. And I hope if anyone's at home listening in, you're roaring too. So, okay. So now, He's in the sky. What does he do next? He jumps in the ocean. No, he doesn't. I was hoping to correct someone on that, yeah? Oh, that happens afterwards. But I'm loving that you're interacting and you're giving guesses. It's brilliant. I love it. But he doesn't. He actually stays. He likes to play around. Krishna does. He doesn't want to just get to it. He always does this. He likes to do a little bit of playing around. So he played like an elephant flying in the sky, and then his tail. I wonder if it was a curly tail. It was slashing, he was slashing his tail in the sky, and then the hard hairs on his body were quivering. These hard hairs, I think when they fell down, they became kusha grass, and I actually wanted to bring some kusha grass in today, and I forgot, but yes. So his hard hairs were quivering, and his glance was luminous. This is what Bhagavatam says, his glance was luminous. What does luminous mean? Yeah, giving light. Why would his glance be luminous? Yeah, oh, brilliant, yes. Yes, because in his universal form, one eye is the sun, the other eye is the moon. Of course it would be luminous. Of course it would be luminous. So now, he's up in the sky. He scatters the clouds with his hooves. So he's just imagine what he's doing. He's, oh. And all the clouds in the sky are scattering. And his white tusks, they're glittering. And he looks at the devotee brahmanas and then he starts his sniffing. This is all really important stuff, guys. This is the aim of life. There's a reason that we're doing this recap. He starts sniffing around. So it's not just a very nice sniff. I'm sure it would be, well, I'm sure it's a lovely sniff, but I'm sure it's a boar-like sniff, like a... So he does all that sniffing around for the earth before he dives into the water. Now, this water, what happens? As soon as he dives in, there's two high waves. And they start speaking, don't they? What do they say? What do they say? They're like, please, Lord, don't cut me in two. Protect me. They're so scared. The Garbhodaka Ocean speaks. The Garbhodaka Ocean is a person? I didn't know that, but Bhagavatam is telling us that as soon as he dives in and there's two high waves, they're getting really scared. They're like, oh no, you're going to break us in two. Please protect me, Krishna. He comes to the bottom of the ocean, sniffs around. He finds the earth and he brings the earth up from the bottom of the ocean. And then this is done really... Bhagavatam? Shukadev Goswami, Maitreya Rishi, describes this really quickly. And this happens a lot in Bhagavatam, that the pastime is told really quickly at first, and then the person that's inquiring, the questioner, they're like, wait, what? Can you tell me a little bit more, please? So at this moment, in this chapter, he kind of brushes over this. So he says he picks up the earth, then he kills Hiranyaksha, and his cheeks and his tongue are smeared with the blood of the demon, and then he starts playing like an elephant, suspending the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. He's right now, Varaha has the earth on the edge of his tusks. What did Varaha do that confirmed to the sages? Because the sages, they still weren't completely sure who this thing was, or this person, or this boar was. They weren't completely sure. So what happened at that moment? Actually, they even started arguing. Lord Brahma with his sons, they're all arguing about who this person, who this boar could be. But right now, they knew. How did they know? How did they know that this is Krishna? He protected the earth, yep. There's something brilliant. There's something else, yep. He killed Hiranyaksha, yep. There was something else. Brilliant. I'm sure that all of this helped them establish that, yes, this is the Lord. But there was one thing that was like a little, that's it. We know for sure that this is Krishna. Yeah? He did do a glance. I always wonder, like, how did he, why did he, he actually glanced at the sages before he went in the water. And I always wonder, why did he glance? What was the reason for his glancing? But there was something else. Brilliant. And I'm loving that you're guessing. And all of these are right. He did all of these things. There was something else. Shall I tell you? I'll tell you. He turned blue. And they're like, ah, that's Krishna. Okay. So they paid obeisances, they offered prayers. And then touching the earth with his hooves. So I'm sure it was on his tusks. He touched the earth with his hooves and he places the earth on the water before he returns to his abode. And then yesterday's verse ends with Maitreya Rishi explaining that one who hears and describes in a devotional service attitude this narration, the Lord is pleased. This pleases the Lord. So just this recap, it brings a lot of pleasure to Krishna. So in that verse, Maitreya was telling us what really pleases Krishna. And what is it? What really pleases Krishna? Yeah, when we hear his activities and when we describe it, so when we hear and talk about it, he loves that. That really gets him very excited, very happy. Now this verse, Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gauranithai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Now this verse that we're on explains the qualifications and the consequence of pleasing the Lord. So it seems, the verse seems simple enough that if you please the Lord by hearing and chanting, there's nothing more in this world left for you to want. There's no more bucket lists. Krishna as Paramatma takes you to the highest perfectional stage. Done. But then, obviously, because you're preparing for class, you've got to read the purport and try and understand it in a proper way so that you can explain it. And then I got really confused because, let me just see if I can. Okay, so the first sentence of the purport, Prabhupada says, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, the Lord gives intelligence to the pure devotees so that they may be elevated to the highest perfectional stage. Now, at first glance, I think, okay, a pure devotee. I think of someone like Mother Yashoda. So, or anyone that's continuously absorbed in Krishna. It's unmotivated, it's uninterrupted. And I think of Mother Yashoda. I think of how she feeds Krishna. And then it looks like she's taking a break from Krishna when she's tending to the pot of overflowing milk. But no, even her tending to the pot of overflowing milk is for Krishna's pleasure. There's no break in that. Everything she does is simply for Krishna. This was my understanding of a pure devotee. But then here Prabhupada is saying that the Lord gives intelligence to the pure devotee. So there's the pure devotee. And then he gives intelligence to them so that they may be elevated even higher to the highest perfectional stage. I was like, wait. I've got to understand this. What does Prabhupada mean by a pure devotee? If they need to go even further, what does this mean by pure devotee? So I had to do a bit of investigating. So as Srila Prabhupada says, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, I thought, okay, we've got to go to 10.10. We've got to find out what's happening there. So in the purport of 10.10, Srila Prabhupada explains that for one who, when their goal is Krishna, but they're addicted to the fruits of activities, he's acting in karma yoga. So if our goal is Krishna, and we really want to please Krishna, and we hear about him, we describe his activities, but still we're addicted to the fruits of activities. Still, when I dress the deities, I really hope that people have seen that I'm the one that dressed the deities. When I sing, I really hope they say that I had a nice voice. When I give my first Bhagavatam class, I hope no one walks out. It's an addiction. I love Prabhupada's word, his use of the word addiction, because usually we hear attachment to fruit of activities, but here he said addicted. I'm like, oh yeah. It's like you can't help it. You have the goal. You're acting in that goal. You're really trying to hear about Krishna. You're trying to be as sincere as possible, but still you're addicted to the fruits. And then what comes as a result? Anger, envy, pride, the desire for wealth, prestige, false prestige. All of this just comes. It's kind of embarrassing, actually. Krishna, Srila Prabhupada then explains, well, and also, if the goal is Krishna, but you take pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, then you're acting in jnana yoga. So what does that mean? Taking pleasure in mental speculations. I tried to understand that, and I understood that as we might try to understand Krishna without Shastra. Sometimes we have a tendency to go off topic or off Shastra, try to come to things with our own conclusions, or maybe whatever's in the news at the time or whatever's trending, maybe feminism or whatever topics are trending, and we try and bring that in rather than sticking directly to scripture. And sometimes we take pleasure in all these kind of logical ways of understanding. And then Prabhupada explains another type of person where their goal is Krishna and they seek Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service. And then they are acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga. And then he explains that this is the highest perfectional stage of life. So of these three different types of people or different practices, karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, what did he say that was in common with all these three points? Thank you, Prithi Kumari. The goal is Krishna. So it's that sincerity. This is the point. And this was my understanding of what it means to be a pure devotee. It's more the idea of a mango, a green mango. Have you heard of this analogy? Prabhupada has used this analogy of a green mango and a yellow mango. When you've got a mango, especially the ones in India, they're yellow, juicy, nice and yummy. But before they get to that, they're a green mango. But it's still a mango. It's just a matter of time. And so as long as your goal is Krishna, you're green. You might be a green mango because you might have all your anarthas coming out. But as long as your goal is Krishna and you're practicing, you're hearing about Krishna constantly, every day, hearing and talking about Krishna, describing Krishna, that green mango will eventually turn into the yellow mango. So then the next question is like, okay, how are we going to get to that becoming a yellow mango? How are we going to get rid of our anarthas so that our practice and our goal gets to that highest perfectional stage? Oh, brilliant. Oh, yes. Association of the devotees. Association. Now, sorry, Prabhu? Oh, yes. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, okay. Thank you. This is exact. So he said a bona fide spiritual master. We've got the association of devotees. We've got the bona fide spiritual master. A tendency we have, I'm looking at you, you're all very senior devotees. But sometimes we might get caught up thinking, I need to work on my anarthas. I hear that a lot. We need to work on our anarthas. Oh, I need to stop my anger. I need to control my envy. There's no use. Krishna sorts that out. It's not on you to figure that out. You know what's on us? What our duty is to hear about Krishna, talk about Krishna. And Krishna is the one that cleanses the desire for material enjoyment. And so as Prabhus have mentioned, that this is actually my favorite part of the Bhagavatam, chapter 2 of Canto 1, where the whole process is described. It's brilliant. So all you need to do is you need to get this affinity to hear about Krishna, this urge, this desire to want to hear about Krishna. And sometimes we don't have that urge. Sometimes it's like, oh, I need to read Bhagavatam. Yeah, I should. One day I will. Tomorrow. I'm a little bit busy today. But if you had that urge, you wouldn't put it off. Now, how do we develop that urge? So we've heard association of devotees and the bona fide spiritual master. And here it's described, we need to serve the devotees who are completely freed from all vice. And then you gain an affinity for hearing about Krishna. Now, if we need to serve a devotee who's completely freed from all vice, it's like, okay, who's completely freed from all vice? Who can you think of, guys? Yeah. Okay, we've got someone here who's freed from all vice. is there anyone else? The spiritual master? Yeah. There is the spiritual master. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the Vyasasam, but sometimes devotees do get let down. Sometimes they're not freed from all vice. So, what am I not allowed to say that? Oh, okay. Okay, but so is there anyone else? He might be sitting on my left-hand side. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. So we're hearing that if you're initiated and you're following the disciplic succession, you're in the disciplic succession, then you're automatically freed from all vice. I mean, personally speaking, I'm initiated. And I'm trying to, but I can assure you, I'm not freed from all vice. But yeah, yes, yeah. Your desire. Mm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Okay. Okay. Okay, thank you. Prabhu is saying that if you have the desire, then even if you think that you're not freed from all vice, you actually are free from all vice. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. I'm a bit thrown off now. Now, my understanding was Srila Prabhupada, at least I know that Srila Prabhupada is free from all vice. And if we serve Srila Prabhupada, then we're, you know, that's a good way to gain that affinity for hearing about Krishna. So how can we please Srila Prabhupada? He's put so much effort into these books. He's so much effort, and I'm sure he's very pleased. We're in the book marathon time, and I remember reading about how happy he was about the first book distributors. I think that was at a petrol station or something. They managed to distribute some books, and he got really happy, and everyone thought, oh my God, let's do this. This really makes him happy. But you know what I think makes him even happier is if we actually read the books as well. If we discuss these books, read Bhagavad Gita and the Gita every single day, we need to develop this urge to hear. So if we read his books, this will please him and we'll develop the affinity for hearing. And as we continue to read and discuss these books and we gain the affinity for hearing, Krishna in the heart cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who's developed the urge to hear. So we don't need to worry about trying separately to cleanse our anarthas. We just need to hear and discuss Krishna every single day. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. And Krishna takes care of the rest. So Prabhupada also touches on sincerity. And he says, and the verse actually talks about Krishna in the heart as Paramatma. So Krishna, he knows our motive. Just like you, Prabhu, you were saying that we have the desire. How do you know? We have the desire. Krishna's there, and he can feel our desires. He knows that. Oh, look, she's trying. Hopefully, he sees this. Hope you see. Yeah, that she's trying. He knows our motives. He is our constant companion. So this is another thing that we need to try. We just need to endeavor with our sincerity. Actually, Prabhupada says here, he says, one merely has to become sincere in his purpose, and then the Lord is there to help in every way. So Krishna takes care of our advancement, and he gives us knowledge. So when I read this, and I thought, what? He gives us knowledge? Like, what, that's just information. Okay, fine. I think I can get the information myself. What does this mean by knowledge? Oh, yes. Yeah, that's it. He reveals it within our hearts. So I looked it up, Gita 4:38. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. See, I love that. So one who has become accomplished in what? Not fully in the perfection of devotional service, no, accomplished in the practice of devotional service. We just need to practice. We just need to keep practicing this hearing and discussing every day. They enjoy this knowledge within himself in due course of time. Green mango, time, yellow mango. So Prabhupada says, when we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. As such, there's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage, and knowledge is the cause of our liberation. So this knowledge, as Prabhu was saying, it comes from within. Krishna gives it to us. But this knowledge, it's clearing this ignorance. This ignorance where I'm actually thinking that I'm this body, I'm Vrinda Kishori, and that's my daughter, and these are my friends. we think in terms of this body, but when Krishna gives us this knowledge, it changes, and then we start seeing who we really are. I realize I'm not actually this body. I'm a spirit soul, and we realize who Krishna is, and we realize our relationship with Krishna, and we can act in our relationship with Krishna. And then once you see who Krishna is, and you have your and you see who you are and your relationship to Krishna, who cares about anything else? I really, really, really want a nice big house. But I think when I get to this stage, I don't think I'll need a big house. I think I will have the knowledge where this will just seem like broken glass. This is the actual jewel. This is the actual valuable asset, is Krishna. And so Srila Prabhupada, well, in the text, it says that, let's see. Nothing remains unachieved. So you don't have a bucket list anymore. The bucket list goes. Everything else is insignificant. So all of this comes. This, and then at that point, you reach the highest perfectional stage. You finally fully reach bhakti yoga. Before that, it's kind of mixed a little bit. But it's still bhakti. We're still engaging in devotional service. We still have the goal of pleasing Krishna. We still engage in hearing and chanting. But we need to do this every day so that we're not kind of, we don't become pseudo devotees. We need to really work on our sincerity to hear about Krishna. And if we don't have that urge to hear about Krishna, let's serve the devotees who are free from all vice. And I believe that's the best that I got from this verse. So Bhagavatam really is your best friend. And you know what? Wait, how much time have we got? Oh, do we have time? How much do you want breakfast? I found this on my bookshelf, and I had no idea who put it there or where it came from, but it's the most beautiful prayer. And then I looked it up. It's actually by Sanatan Goswami in his Krishna Lila Stava. And I've got to read it to you because I'm hoping this gets you all inspired to read Bhagavatam every day. And, you know, coming to class is lovely, but you know what's really, really nice? Is when you discuss with your friends or your family, also have this lovely time for discussion. And you know, your closest friends will be those that you discuss with. They're my best friends, the ones that I get together, you know, when we come together and we say, oh, let's discuss Bhagavatam, or let's discuss the Gita. Oh, it's lovely, it's lovely. Okay, so I'll just read this and then we can stop. Okay. Oh, Srimad Bhagavatam, O nectar churned from the ocean of all the Vedic scriptures, O most prominent transcendental fruit of all the Vedas, O you who are enriched with the jewels of all spiritual philosophical conclusions, O you who grant spiritual vision to all the people of the world, O life breath of the Vaishnav devotees, O Lord, you are the sun that has arisen to dispel the darkness of Kali Yuga. You are actually Lord Krishna who has returned among us. O Srimad Bhagavatam, I offer my respectful obeisances to you. By reading you, one attains transcendental bliss, for your syllables rain pure love of God upon the reader. You are always to be served by everyone, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O my only friend, O my companion, O my teacher, O my great wealth, O my deliverer, O my good fortune, O my bliss, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O giver of saintliness to the unsaintly, O uplifter of the very fallen, please don't ever leave me. Please become manifest in my heart and my throat, accompanied by pure love for Krishna. So Grantharaj, wait, before we do that, does anyone have any questions? Oh, yes, Prabhu.
I have a comment.
Okay.
There was one devotee, he's my god brother. Mm-hmm. Srila Bhakti Chirumaj asked him, why you took so long to take initiation? Mm. But he said, I was trying to become pure. Mm. So Srila Bhakti Chirumaj explained to him, that's not the way you do it. By taking initiation, having a spiritual master, that makes you to the level of pure.
Mm. Mm. So you're saying you don't need to wait until you're pure in order to take initiation.
Yeah.
Initiation is kind of like the gate. It's the journey. It's part of the journey to get to the pure stage.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. Okay, time for breakfast. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.